If you are watching this on YouTube or listening to this podcast, wherever you are today, please hit that subscribe button, that follow button, so that you can stay current on the material that we are providing. But not only that, you then help us to spread the word to more people. You are vital in this mission to reaching our world of people just like you who are living in this nightmare. Welcome to the Covert Narcissism Podcast. I'm your host, Renee Swanson. I'm Renee Swanson, your host of the Covert Narcissism Podcast. And thank you everyone out there who is listening to us today. And we have another story of hope. I'm so excited to have another guest on this this series that I'm doing. And this time we have a guy. His name is Dave. And I've known Dave for a little while through CNG now. And I'm just thrilled that he is here to share his story of hope with you today. So Dave, thank you so much for joining us.
It's my pleasure, Renee. Thanks for inviting me.
So Dave, let us know kind of how you got started on this journey of covert narcissism. Like what brought you to me in the first place?
Sure. Well, I was in a long-term marriage and relationship. I mean, for me, it was a total of like 18 years. And there was some betrayal trauma that was discovered rather suddenly. And I was very, very confused by it because I had no real inkling that anything was really wrong. I had been conditioned, you know, to really think that everything was normal. And so I was really confused. And I had a family member that had asked me if I knew anything about narcissism. And I didn't. I've heard the term, but, you know, you start going on the internet and looking things up and you're all over the place, right? And a lot of it fit, you know. There were a lot of things that I could identify that made sense, but then it was it wasn't until I discovered covert narcissism specifically that it seemed to be a roadmap of my 18 years, you know. And then when I had that information, I could look back and realize that things weren't right from the beginning, and a lot of clues started just clicking into place and making sense. And then I found your podcast, which went into it in a lot more detail. And I think that's when it really clicked for me that I was in the right place, when your stories were pretty much scripts of my situation that had been going on. So that's how I had come across it.
Okay. It's so amazing that how similar all the stories are. Like so many people come to me and go, boy, you're writing my script. You're writing telling my story, telling my life. And while there are differences, yes, absolutely, there are differences. There are so many elements that are the same.
Yeah, it's rather eerie, you know.
Yes.
And the on a positive side to that is that once you are familiar with it, and you've gone through it, when you're able to help others going through it, even though the situations are different, the framework is the same. So what worked for somebody else can a lot of times be applicable to your situation too. Maybe tweak it in a certain way, or once you're in the right place, there's some, I think, tactics and strategies that you can do that apply even with the difference in the situation. So because they're so similar, initially I felt very isolated, that nobody could relate to like my situation. But when I found others that had really gone through the same thing, I really connected almost immediately. So the fact that it is so similar, there is a positive side of it when it comes to recovery. So
very true. Very true. Mm-hmm. Now you joined my group coaching sessions. And was that a place where you found that connection with others, where you didn't feel so isolated?
Yeah, that was absolutely. That was extremely powerful because it was the first time where I was able to connect with others, not by listening to a podcast, but actually like interacting with others that had gone through the situation. It also is kind of eye-opening to me. One lesson I learned in that was that looking at other people's situations rather than your own it's not as confusing and it's not as cloudy. It's really difficult when you're trying to think through your situation and what to do. And you're almost in a panic mode. I mean, I was, you know, mm-hmm. I was in, you know, the fight, flight and all that. When I was thinking about my own situation, but when I started listening to other people, and even though the situations were similar, I didn't have that same reaction. It wasn't as triggering. In fact, it was kind of the opposite. You kind of wanted to dive in and help mm-hmm. and listen and support and say, I had that too. Mm-hmm. You know, it's okay. And so that taught me that, okay, so if I look at my situation as if it was somebody else's situation, what would I tell them or what would I advise them to do? And that really helped me through. So the group session was I would say, a huge leap forward in my progress towards recovery.
Yeah. Of all the work that I do, it's the group session that seems to be the most powerful because of exactly what you're describing. You now have other people that you can really, truly relate to. You're hearing their stories, but I love what you're saying because you're not in their shoes, even though there's similarities, you can see it as an observer. And when you can get to the point that you can observe your own situation without the emotional attachment, that's where you can really start to gain a healthier perspective and start reframing what you're living through.
You're absolutely right. I kind of think of it like this. Imagine that you're drowning, you're underwater, right? And you don't know what to do. You don't really know which way to swim or to calm down or whatever. But if you were in a boat and you were looking down at someone that was drowning, you might have a better idea of which direction to go or what tools to use or whatever to get out of the situation. But you just kind of got to flip that perspective a little bit. And it's not easy.
No.
It's not easy because those emotions are so cloudy. But if it helps just one or two times, I mean, it's immense. The other thing is I found with the group connections was I developed long-standing relationships with some of the people in the group mm-hmm. that I can still communicate with today. And there were times when I really struggled with something as simple as, man, I really don't know how to communicate this message. You know, can you tell me what you think? And they would they'd give me some advice like, hey, why don't you try this or why don't you try that? And when they said it, it was like, why didn't I think of that? You know, it's like, of course, that makes sense, right?
Right.
But sometimes you just got to bounce that off somebody that's been through it to help you get back on track. So right. Very, very powerful.
Right. And what I'm finding is that these groups are then developing friendships that are lasting friendships.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's very different than, let's say, a friend or a family member who hasn't been through the situation, but is very supportive, right? Because even though they're supportive of you, the advice they give may not be experienced in dealing with a narcissist, you know? And so there were many times through this, it was like, well, why don't you just draw a boundary and tell them, you know, no or whatever. And I'd have to explain like, well, if I tell them what my boundary is, then I know what's going to happen next, you know, and right. I don't want to deal with that. So, you know,
so
I have to figure out a more creative way to achieve what I'm looking for, you know? Mm-hmm. You do have to have, you know, a family member or a friend that you could pick up the phone at any time, that even if they're not, you know, really understanding of narcissism, but there's a difference, you know, in dealing with someone that has been through it before.
Right. Okay. So now that you are, well, let me ask, where are things today for you?
Yeah. So it's been 2.5 years that I went through the process and the divorce is final now. Finally. And, you know, it's interesting because there's a sense of accomplishment with the finality to it, but there's always the sense of, man, I'm not really happy about this because of how everything turned out. You know, I didn't go into the marriage, you know, with the aim that it would end in divorce, right? So it's one of those things where, like, I have a hard time celebrating it. But I also look at how grateful I am that I don't have to be abused anymore and that the future is what I make of it. And I find that I'm a bit more appreciative and grateful for every day that I have and the things that I have. In my journey, not to get into too much detail, but you know, Renee, I fought for my house, you know, for a long time to keep my home, which I did. But the other day it was beautiful outside and I went out and I trimmed the bushes, you know, and never in my life have I been so happy to trim the bushes, but because wow. It was like, wow, I really fought for this place and it's mine and I get to keep it for my kids and they have a family home and I'm going to trim these bushes. I'm going to be proud of it. It just, it's funny how, you know, your perspective can change when you get all of that uncertainty and fear and threat behind you.
Right.
But it will happen. You know, when you get to that other side, when it is behind you, you are able to think about the future in a more certain and less panicked way than what happened in the past.
Mm-hmm.
I'll never forget what happened, but it helped frame up what the future is going to be.
Okay. Okay. And that's a great way to put it and a great perspective to put on this. When we do, you know, finally reach that point of getting out of the marriage, I know for me, I thought, oh, I'm going to be so happy. I'm going to, you know, just dance and be joyous and I'm going to celebrate. And then I wasn't. I didn't right. feel that way. Instead, I was very overwhelmed with a whole lot of emotions. There was a lot of mixture to it. There was a lot of sadness, a lot of grief, because I didn't sign up for divorce. That wasn't in my game plan. And so there is an element of sadness. There's an element of failure where you start having some self-doubt, some self-judgment come in, as well as just embracing some peacefulness.
Yeah. And, you know, that's another important point that I'd like to bring up is I'm sure that many people listening are like me, that they felt overwhelmed by some guilt, some shame, some sense of failure, that it is your fault, and a lot of heaviness on your shoulders, right? And I dealt with that. And a lot of people that I've talked to that have been through this feel the same way.
Mm-hmm.
And it took a lot to really learn, and you say it a lot, but to give yourself some grace mm-hmm. and to forgive yourself, you know. And I was listening to, I heard some advice from an actor I was listening to, and she said that in what she was talking about, actually, it's kind of interesting when you listen to how an actor frames it, is she was kind of thinking about like, how to think when you're acting and change your perspective on something. And she was talking about like, like forgiveness pretty much. And she said, you have to think of it like, how would you forgive your best friend? Like that person that would go to bat for you no matter what, that would pick up the phone, you know, hide the body, you know, whatever that everybody should have a friend like that. Right. So if they made a mistake, or they ended up in something, you would always find a way to forgive them, and you would find a way to give them support and grace, mm-hmm. and then flip it and go, well, that's you, you know. So
right.
if you could forgive your best friend like that, then you got to look at yourself and you've got to find a way to forgive yourself for it, because I'm sure that no one that's gone through this type of abuse intended for it to happen. And although we can all look back and go, man, I should have known, or I should have identified this red flag, and there's choices in life that we could make and we could have gone a different way, but the intention was never to end up where we are. And you have to give yourself a little bit of grace and credit for that. And the future is what you make of it, right? So,
yeah. Yeah. Dave, what a great message. And I love what you're saying. Forgiveness is for yourself. Forgiveness is for you. And of all the people in the world, we've got, you know, billions of people in this world, there is one person that you will spend the rest of your life with, and that's yourself. You know, there is one person that you will talk to more than anyone else in the whole world combined, even, and that is yourself. And so we have to find a way to give ourselves grace to get off our own back. We've all been through enough judgment. We've been through enough, you know, accusations or manipulations or blaming and guilting and all of this, that we definitely don't need to join all of that and do it to ourselves.
That's right. That's right. In a way, it's almost like their abuse continues, but they just transferred it onto you to abuse yourself, you know, and I'm not going to let, in my case, her do that, you know, it's like, okay, you know, I'm going to give myself a little bit of credit and grace. And I got through it. Okay. And, I'm a great dad and I've got a great relationship with my kids and I'm going to have a wonderful family that I can enjoy. And it's just going to be different than how I intended it to be or how I pictured it be, but that doesn't mean that it's not meant to be, you know? Mm-hmm. So, and if you can, I think if you can aim for the happiness, you can get there, especially as you lose the weight of an abuser behind you.
Right. Right. And the abuse does get inside us. I've said it before. I'll say it again, that one of the biggest dangers of covert abuse is that the abuse gets inside of you and we start abusing ourselves.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And it's also kind of crazy how it changes us when we're around it. You know, and I look back at like how I acted and how I behaved when I was in the relationship and I'm like, man, that is not me, you know, but it was for many years. It was like, you know, I just, that's not who I intended to be, but it's just, it's so weird how you're conditioned to doing these things. Mm-hmm. That rearview mirror is awfully clear, you know, it's, when you go back, it's
right.
It's something else.
Right. Which is where the grace has to come in. Because when I look back in my rearview mirror, I was becoming somebody that wasn't me. And so I was reacting. Mm-hmm. I was defensive. I was, you know, the walls were going up around me because it's a survival mode. You know, it's a survival position that I had kind of anchored down into. And mm-hmm. that's where I found, for me at least, that I had to give myself the most grace. That, you know, I wasn't perfect. I know that, but I'm not after perfect. I'm after being human.
Yeah. And for those that have kids, so I have three kids. And one of the things that I noticed, because being a good parent, you know, was critical in making sure that the kids had a safe, trusted and supportive parent through all this was an extremely important goal of mine. But I found that when I was in the proximity of my ex, that my whole attitude and everything changed. I was more agitated. I was way more anxious. I was snippy. I was kind of bossy with the kids, even after the separation and everything. Mm-hmm. And so what I had to do was, you know, I realized pretty quickly, like the parallel parenting instead of co-parenting was extremely obvious and essential. But I had to make sure that I had space between me and that person as much as possible. And I try not to let the perception or other people's opinions of how people should parent when they're in a divorce impact how I parent. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is, you know, on Facebook or any social media, you see lots of people bragging about how wonderful co-parenting is, that they can go to the games together, they can do all these things. And if you're not this, then you must be less, right? And it's like, yeah, but were those people abused? Because I guarantee you, if someone was in a physical abuse situation, no one would expect them to be in the same room with them. And mental abuse is abuse. It's mm-hmm. it's no good. It's still the same. It's still threatening. Mm-hmm. So when I gave myself the grace to say, okay, you know, you don't have to be around her and you don't have to, you know, we have a custody agreement that is defined and clear and I follow that, but it doesn't say that I have to be face to face with her at all these different things or anything like that. And the kids were able to adjust their expectations and it made things a lot easier for me. so that I can be the best parent that I want to be in all those times. Mm-hmm. And not all anxious and agitated and turning into that. It was like, I was telling my best friend, it was like she was radioactive. And when I was near her, it was like radiation poisoning. Like it just made me sick, mm-hmm. you know?
So what I hear you saying is you became your own yardstick. You were measuring things based on your thoughts, feelings, and opinions, and quit relying on everyone else's thoughts, feelings, and opinions.
That's right. That's right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So we're going to wrap this up. And as we do, what message do you have for those out there living this that you wish somebody had said to you back when you were trying to get your eyes open to all of this?
Yeah. Well, I'm extremely glad that someone said, "Hey, Dave, do you know anything about narcissism?" But besides that, you know, I would just give the advice that you have to remember that they're never going to change. Okay. That other person, the abuser. Okay. They're never going to change. And that recovery is about you. It's not about them. So you can't keep waiting for them to stop trying to abuse you or stop trying to push your boundaries, because it's never going to happen. It's just going to keep going on. So the only thing you can control is your own emotions and how you deal with things. I just gave you that co-parenting and parallel parenting situation. That's how I had to deal with things. Her behavior and her methods to get under my skin haven't changed since day one, you know? And yet how I look at them and how I deal with it is completely different now, because I learned that I had to change my expectations. I had to expect that they were going to fail, that they were going to do all these things to get under my skin. And now when it happens, guess what? I'm not surprised, and it doesn't emotionally upset me as much, and I'm prepared. And it's, you know, it never fails. It's every transition or every interaction. It's, you know, it's the same. So it's about you. It's not about them. And that'll help if you can say that to yourself every time, that'll really help you get through those moments.
Mm-hmm. And it's where I talk about boundaries, where I say boundaries are not for them. The boundaries are for you.
Mm-hmm. Yep,
you put your boundaries up, and those boundaries are in place for you.
Yeah. And it's not to say it's about you to give you the blame. Right?
No.
Because you're not going to run a perfect game either. I mean, there's many times where I would tell myself, don't fall for that circular argument. And yet I did, you know,
that's where the grace comes in.
Yeah. Like, you know, you're going to make mistakes along the way. It being about you is that they just don't have as much impact on you anymore, and you're not going to let them. And that's, mm-hmm. it takes time. You got to be patient with that, but it does happen. It eventually, you'll get there.
Okay. Well, Dave, thank you so much for sharing your story of hope here with this audience.
Thank you for having me. Always a pleasure.
Okay. And everyone out there listening, I wish you so much peace, you know, on this journey. And I say that a lot. I say that at the end of every episode, but I want you to know that I sincerely mean that from the very depths of my heart. There is peace to be found. And when we say, you know, when, as Dave was saying, that it's about you, not about them, that's the peace I'm talking about. That peace you're never going to find with them, but the closure comes when you quit trying to find it with them and you embrace the peace that's inside of you. So I wish everyone out there so much peace on your journey of healing.
You have been listening to the Covert Narcissism Podcast with your host, Renee Swanson. Be sure to check out our website at www.covertnarcissism.com. There you will find many resources just for you to help you on this journey. You can also reach out to me by email at Renee, R-E-N-E-E, at cnglifecoaching.com. Those letters are CNG as in Covert Narcissism Group. I do look forward to hearing from you. I wish you so much peace on your journey of healing.
The information provided by Renee Swanson and the Covert Narcissism Podcast is for educational purposes only and is not to be used for diagnosis purposes and not intended to be a substitute for clinical care. Please consult a healthcare provider for guidance specific to your case. This material discusses narcissism in general. It does not claim that any specific person has narcissism and should not be used to refer to any specific person as having narcissism. Permission is not granted to link to or repost this material to support an allegation or a claim that any specific person is a narcissist. That would be an unauthorized misuse of the material and information provided.